Well, ho, 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 everybody. It's that time of year again. Yes. We sent Paul and Mary Jo home with their eggnog, and it's just you and me and the best of Windows Weekly for 2020. All this year, Windows Weekly has come to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more. And thanks, LastPass.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 704 for December 23rd, 2020. The best of 2020. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here. I look forward to these all year. End of the year Windows Weekly Best Of. We've been compiling clips thanks to Karsten Bondi and Micah Sargent, who've been knocking heads trying to figure out what the best clips are. Thanks to our editors, Kevin and Anthony and John and Victor, who put all this together. Here, without further ado, some of the most interesting moments of 2020. One that's really kind of resonated all year long is the end of Windows 7. The end of the line for Windows 7.
It's endings and new beginnings.
Yeah.
It's actually a lucky thing that they had that last patch Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why? But wait, they didn't fix the crypto bug on Windows 7. Oh, wait. Well, what are they going
to
do?
It's almost like they invented a zero day just to prevent, you know, to get people to upgrade, you know, on day one or something.
I know very little about this, but didn't Windows 7 not need that patch?
All versions of Windows needed that patch.
I saw Windows 10, Windows Server 2016, and 2019, and that was it.
It was Encrypt 32 DLL, which is in all versions of Windows. It's what's used to sign certificates, and the threat, one of the threats is that you could forge a certificate. So you could say, I just wrote Microsoft Word. Here, have a copy. And it could be signed.
I need to forge a certificate for my app.
exactly. So this was an important patch. In fact, it was the NSA that discovered it.
Yeah.
I hope they told Microsoft months ago.
Oh, yeah, of course. They're probably screwing around in that back door that everyone knows they have. And
I learned a new term called NOBUS.
NOBUS.
And this is a NOBUS, N-O-B-U-S. It's an acronym it's a squishonym that the NSA uses for an exploit that's so hard to take advantage of that nobody but us can use it. And they don't tell people about NOBUS.
Right.
Michael Hayden, the former head of the NSA, said, look, if it's going to take 4 acres of supercomputers to, you know, take advantage of this exploit, we don't bother getting it fixed. It's good for us. Because we got 4 acres of supercomputers.
Yeah, a few companies have that scale of
So there's this doctrine of NOBUS flaws. This was not a NOBUS flaw. This is a kind of a serious issue, which is patched in 10, right? But
yep.
Well, I mean, there's no excuse not to patch it in 7 if it is vulnerable. Right. And also 8.1, right? They should be patching every...
I'll have to look at the NSA bulletin, but I think that my memory is they said it would be in all versions of Windows. Because it's Crypt 32 DLL, which I think all the crypto processes, including BitLocker and certificates, use.
So when we started our day yesterday, knowing it was the last day, Windows 7 would get patches. When I heard there were a lot of rumors going around about NSA press conference and this and that, and I'm like, oh, man. Are you kidding? Like, is there going to be something? Right? Yeah. Is there going to be something where they say, okay, we're patching Windows 7 one last time, and this is why you need to upgrade, right? That was my guess of how, if that was what it was, they would have positioned it, right?
So Brian Krebs said that what happened, it was revealed to Microsoft. Microsoft fixed it. They quietly shipped fixes to the military.
Yeah.
Okay. And other high value customers and targets that manage key internet infrastructure. And then that's what
kept anybody from saying anything until January 14th when it was, you know, Patch Tuesday yesterday when it was patched.
Surprised Google
didn't
just reveal it 120 days ago like they usually do.
Google has, by the way, settled on 90 days. They said it's going to be 90 days.
90 days, right. Yeah.
So Crypt32 DLL was introduced into Windows 20 years ago in NT 4.0. XP is vulnerable. Sure. 7 is vulnerable.
Wow.
Well, according to Krebs. So,
okay, I'm surprised.
Well, it stands to reason they would patch it then, even though Windows, because Windows 7 is still going to be in use.
That's what I would say, too.
Well, wait a minute now. According to the NSA, the problem exists in Windows 10 and Windows Server 2016, which was patched.
Okay. It's possible this component was updated over time, right? So that would explain why older versions don't need it.
Microsoft says no active exploitations have been seen to date. It's unclear. It's unclear. I mean,
it would be suicide for them not to have patched 7 with this. If it, right? That wouldn't even make sense.
No.
It would be like crazy because yesterday was the last patch.
It's like, bye-bye. And we left a little something for you.
Here's a little Windows 10 upgrade offer you might want to take advantage of.
No, and you know what? If they hadn't done that, and everybody knew this was the last day, don't you think there'd be this gigantic outcry?
Well, we have to kind of describe it this way because it is the last day officially, but Microsoft patched XP a couple of times. They will, of course, do it. If this was some rampant internet attack, of course they would ship a patch. So that's why I'm keeping that Windows 7 thing going. I can't wait to see the next update.
See what happens. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it must be that it only affects because it's a flaw in the ECC, the elliptic curve crypto. So maybe those earlier versions of Windows didn't even
have that.
It's relatively new.
That's my guess. Just my uneducated guess. Left has to be Gibson.
Did you say educated?
I said uneducated.
You mean creducated?
Creducated. Nice.
We're gonna drop a creducation bomb.
I'm looking at the Microsoft CVE entry, and it does not mention any other versions of Windows. They just mention the patches, but they don't say it doesn't affect. They don't say what it affects one way or the other.
It would be incredibly irresponsible to patch one version of Windows, right? I mean, that makes more
sense. There's still like 30% of Windows users, 25-30% using Windows 7, including some of the biggest enterprises, right? And then they don't patch it.
And it doesn't matter how you count. That's hundreds of millions of people. I mean, no matter, no matter what the number is.
They don't say explicitly it only affects these versions, but that's all they patched. And they don't imply that it affected any other versions.
Yeah.
So if you really want to know something, ask Edward Snowden.
We'll call him up.
We're
going
to be getting to the point where his information's a little out of date.
He's out of date now. Yeah, he's only. Yeah. I know what Putin tells
me. Like asking Wozniak for some information about like Mac internals. It's like I don't know.
I hope it's patched. As far as we know, the free upgrade continues, right?
Yeah.
Today
is silence. No one's talking about it. Free upgrade that everyone can use.
Yeah.
today's the day that you'll see a big pop-up on your Windows 7 machine saying...
Yep, I saw it this morning.
Did you?
It's beautiful.
You did?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So only on non-domain joined and machines in...
Actually, I could be... Are you sure about that?
They told me that. They said it will not appear on domain joined machines or machines in kiosk mode.
Kiosk mode, okay. I think it might appear on domain joined machines that aren't part of that extended service program. But where did I see that?
They told me no, but yeah.
Do you hear from anybody who says, I just love Windows 7. I'm not going to move to 10.
Yeah. I'm one of those people, Leo. And I got to say. No.
Well, you know who used to say that? Steve Gibson. And he even has bowed to the inevitable. He upgraded.
Well, so for the past 2 or 3 weeks, I've been using Windows 7. And I love it. And I have to say... This is the last version of Windows that was created before any of the mobile nonsense. Yep. Yep. And it has a purity to it that I really appreciate. It reminds me of the Mac in some ways in that it's kind of a minimalist system and there's not a bunch of junk in your face, whatever.
Yeah. I always said it was the best version of Windows they ever
had. Yeah. The most popular, I would say so far. But, you know, it's irresponsible to think that you're going to run this thing over a period of time. And I understand wanting to. I completely understand.
Yeah.
Windows 7 users have not been served by any meaningful feature updates ever. You know, there was one service pack that came out in 2011 that didn't really have much in the way of features. And that was kind of the end of that. But let's face it, this NSA thing or whatever, there's going to be a zero day. There are hundreds of millions of people using this thing. It is absolutely going to be a target. And so you can do yourself a favor by using a modern browser that will help in some ways using AV, obviously. But eventually this thing is going to be exploited and it's a ticking time bomb. It's unfortunate because it still feels very modern to me.
Mm. There's also for enterprises some compliance concerns too. Like if you're running a browser that's no longer supported, like say you're not getting extended security updates, right? And somebody says, "Oh, you know, you're going to supply something for us. What version of Windows are you using?" And you say 7.
Yep.
It's like, you know.
That was the thing for people who are sticking with XP. That was when it finally, you know, they really had to change. Was when the browsers stopped updating, right? When you're not,
and that took 2 years, by the way.
Yeah,
which is kind of interesting.
That was the kiss of death.
So we'll see how long it lasts for 7. It's going to be based on usage. If the numbers remain
high, and also
high,
what Chrome does, what Google does with Chrome.
Yeah, because everybody's based on Chrome now, right?
well, okay, fair enough. Actually, that's true. Yeah. Well, Firefox. We should look at Firefox too.
Yeah,
Has Firefox
it's a
said
big user base?
I don't know if Firefox.
I feel
has
like
said,
they so, lasted the longest with XP.
Google just said till July 2021 they will support.
Well, said at least
Chrome
until July 2021.
Until until least.
Yeah, they could go up. Last time around, like I said, you know, with Windows XP, they went 2 years.
Mary Jo had the scoop. Big reorg at Microsoft this week. Did it happen?
Yeah.
Is today the day? Is this like
today's the day?
They do it at the beginning of most years, right? Is that right?
Yeah, usually January or February, you get these big reorgs.
So it's not unexpected.
No, not really. Well, although you never know which part of Microsoft's going to get reorged in these things. Like, is it going to be Azure? Is it going to be sales? But today it was experiences and devices, which is the home of Windows and the home of Surface.
Also, just real quick, the tiny, tiny slice of Microsoft that I care about the most.
I know.
Okay, I know. So, you filed this actually at 8 a.m.
8:15.
It just happened at the time.
Yep.
I saw it on Tech Meme. You were at the very tippity top of the Tech Meme heap today. Yep. Which must
Mary Jo, by the way, deserves some credit for the story, but I feel like I deserve some credit for my promo graphic.
Oh, well, let me
go. Oh, yeah, you do.
Let me go pull up Therat.com. Did you use Paint to do that, or
no? I did not.
You're always good with the graphics; they're always hilarious and timely.
Panos in, Joby out. That one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh,
because that was a picture of something else in the background, and they made it look like Joby.
Very subtle. It's very subtle.
Very nice.
Nicely blurred to look like the original.
Wow. Very nicely
done.
You
even like played with the aspect ratio to give it a little bit of cantering. That's very nice.
Yep. Yep.
That's a good point.
But anyway, let's not focus on my amazing achievement here. Let's talk instead about...
Well, wait a minute. Now that I'm reading this, I'm a little scared. What happened to Joe B?
Okay. So there's lots of parts to this, right? So what's the biggest top line thing is Panos now is going to head up Windows and devices, not just devices. So his title stays the same, Chief Product Officer, but now he's running a group called Windows Plus Devices, and that's Windows Client, the experience part of Windows, plus all the other stuff he already was running, so Surface, basically, in one combined unit. Before, those were two separate units. And Joe B., who has been running Windows Experiences on the client, is going to move to Office and run Office Experiences along with another person who I didn't know. Do you know this person, Elise Holacek, Paul? Do you know who that is?
I don't believe so.
No, I didn't know him either.
I'm bad
but
with
together,
names, but I that doesn't sound.
Yeah,
funny.
I looked him up on LinkedIn, and I'm like, I don't know that guy, but I think Alice Holacek's going to be engineering, and Joe is going to be product management, and they're going to run it as a team. And at the same time, Joe is keeping the thing called Epic Essentials, Essential Products Inclusive Community, which means
nobody wanted that, huh?
Mobile apps on Android and iOS. Oh, you know, so he keeps Launcher and he keeps your phone and keeps Microsoft News, I believe, yeah. as part of the.
Okay. That makes some sense.
It does.
It has more to do with the Office part of Microsoft 365 does, right? than it does with Windows. Yep. Yeah.
Agree. And then as part of this as well, what else should we talk about? There's so many parts to this.
I know. Well, let's hold on for 1 second because let's think about or maybe talk about a little bit. What do we think this means? Right. Because when you look at the period of time, it's been almost 2 years now, right? Since Terry Morrison was kind of shown the door.
Right.
Although I guess that occurred over a 6 month period or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, my big complaint about Windows has been that it's kind of rudderless, you know, that there isn't a face of this part of the company. Obviously, as part of Microsoft 365, there's some representation there, but there isn't like a person directly responsible just for Windows, you know?
Right. There was a guy, you wrote about this, Eran Megiddo, I think his name is. I know I'm butchering the pronunciation, but they appointed him in May of last year to kind of be the new face of Windows. But then he never really came out to the public and said, here I am. I'm the guy.
Yeah.
I'm running strategy for Windows, right?
Right.
So he also heads up some education initiatives too. And I met him a couple times on education tours, but I never had... he never came to an event and said, I'm the guy representing Windows, right?
Yeah, but Panos Panay is a very high-profile person. So him, a person of his caliber, being directly responsible for Windows client, to me is great. It's a great, great news. Windows is still not directly represented on the senior leadership team, which...
Right.
Problem with, you know, we'll talk about the revenue, earnings later, but Microsoft just reported their latest quarterly earnings, and we'll never know for sure because they don't provide the math we need, but I'm pretty damn sure Windows is their single biggest business. And that's kind of interesting.
That's not long-term, you know, though. That's not the future. Microsoft is not Windows.
I know, but how many years have we been saying that? You know, it's like, cloud's the future. Windows is the past. Yeah, cloud's the future. It's like, well, Windows is still making more money than the cloud, guys. So, we'll get to that, but.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw what I added to my post later that I got a little snippet from Panos's email to everyone about his new job.
I don't think so. Nope.
But he did say, this is an amazing time and opportunity to bring more energy to Windows and our customers using Windows. So he's saying, we know we've been kind of all over the map. And
pay no attention.
Oh, you mean I'm not the only one?
Such an Adela fellow. Windows still rules.
Well, by the way, I actually, if I could read a little bit into this, they're never going to come out and say anything about this. But I mean, this to me is an implicit acknowledgement that they have ignored Windows too much and to the detriment of their customers and to their partners and to the company.
Well, that's interesting. So, okay. So, that's the tea leaves, which I was going to get to. Like, what does this all mean? I think that's interesting.
That's part of it. I mean, that's part of it. It's not a complete reversal. Like I said, there's no SLT representation here.
What's SLT?
Or any change. Senior leadership team, sorry.
Satch's inner circle, right, of people he takes advice from and meets with every week.
Panos does not get a seat at the table.
No, he does not.
The big boy table.
But Panos's boss, Rajesh Jha, is on the SLT, the senior leadership team. So
the other thing, if you're looking for something negative to worry about with the Panos situation,
and
who would be looking for that, Paul? Who looks for the dark cloud and every silver lining?
Positive. Okay. Well, actually, I'm sorry. I'm going in a direction that I don't think you're. I'm not going in that direction.
Oh,
what I mean is, one of the complaints one might make about Panos becoming in charge of Windows is that he is the last vestige of the Sinofsky regime.
He
came up under Sinofsky. That was a very divisive period of time in Microsoft's history.
It what did was he do? Because Sinofsky was the guy who brought us Windows 8. What did he do? What did Pinay do in the Sinofsky era?
He ran hardware, right?
Well, he did software Surface. Surface only happened because Sinofsky looked at it and said, this needs to happen, and he pushed it through.
So that's plausible deniability. I mean, he's not sitting there going, what we really need is a tablet-based operating system. He's not doing that.
So though he did come up in Microsoft under Sinofsky and literally owes his career at Microsoft to Sinofsky, he doesn't have the ability to ruin Windows like Sinofsky did. There's no indication that that's what he wants. In fact,
thank you. Glad to know that.
Okay. But I mean, he literally is the only major executive of any stripe at Microsoft who was part of Sinofsky's regime. I mean, it's kind of interesting that he survived. And my belief is that the reason he is still there is because he is not like,
right,
Sinofsky and those people who, all of whom are gone now, by the way. So, I mean, he's not that person. I don't think we need to worry about that. And I think the synthesis between the hardware and the software here, which is something he's always tried to push, is going to make Surface and Windows better. I think he is the right person for this job.
There were lots of gates this year, none of them really amounting to much, including the Surface Laptop 3 Crackgate. Did it happen to you?
I have to say, I was a little nervous. I happened to be on Twitter the other day, and that's enough to be nervous just in general.
It is.
In particular, because of a tweet that I saw fly by, Mary Jo, about our beautiful Surface Laptop 3s and potential issues for the screens cracking. What's going on?
I know. I'm telling you, when you're an owner of a device and you see this come through, it doesn't make you feel too good. Yeah, so there's people on Reddit, Microsoft Answer Forum, and now I'm hearing from people directly out there on the internet who say they have a brand new Surface Laptop 3 and they haven't dropped it. They haven't slammed it down. They haven't had any kind of a bumping issue with it. And they're noticing either a hairline crack along the corner or sometimes a crack across the entire screen that just have spontaneously shown up.
So we should give Micah the good news, though.
I know. You're safe, Micah, probably, because everybody who's reporting it has an aluminum Surface Laptop 3.
And who would be dumb enough to not get a Surface Laptop without Elegant Air?
Now, I have to say, right here, Mary Jo, I had an out loud cackle when I was reading your article and you said, knock on aluminum. That was a great line, so props for that. But here you can see me feeling my fine Alcantara.
A little too much, frankly.
Yeah. I'm getting a little uncomfortable too, honestly. And that may be what's keeping my laptop safe. I will say whenever I covered the event where they announced these new laptops, and I remember the moment where they were bragging about the lack of the little rubberized sort of rim or seal around the outside of the laptop screen as sort of, that was a feature. And that was because of the way that they'd precisely engineered it to where you can open it and close it with one finger while you're playing the piano with your other hand or something like that.
Yeah, but make sure the finger's in the middle, not in the corner, because apparently that might be
that's a bad spot.
Part of the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
it's got to be a flex problem, you know, like a
that's what people are saying. Yeah.
Well,
people say they're hearing this cracking sound sometimes when they open it. And then some people have said they noticed a flex and then suddenly the screen cracks.
Oh, Lord. So then go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Is this impacting both 13 and 15 inch versions or just one?
So I've only heard from 13s so far.
Oh, no. That's ours.
Which is interesting.
I wonder if they made an internal change there to trim the weight, maybe, or
one person. So, okay, first we should say this is not widespread because I haven't heard from everybody who has a Surface Laptop 3, and it also has not affected me. But we don't know how many people, and Microsoft, of course, is not saying how many people. But one person I saw on one of the places where people are reporting problems that guessed something that I thought made a lot of sense. He said, I wonder if it has to do with Microsoft removing the gasket between the glass and the metal when they took the Alcantara out.
Yeah. So, well, and let me ask you, because Mary Jo, you have one that that is just the aluminum, and you mentioned that you haven't kept it protected or any type of extra safe or anything like that, and it's still causing these issues. So,
no, for me though,
you're not having the problem, right?
Yeah, you would think me, right? Because I'm just like literally throwing it in a large purse and taking it with no sleeve. And I've also noticed my cat has started jumping up on here.
Whoa!
And yeah, but I don't think the problem is when you're carrying it around. I think the problem is opening and closing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're probably not doing that in a, you know, like the gorilla in those Samsonite ads where he's jumping up and down in the luggage or whatever.
Right. I'm not.
Know? Like you're probably pretty gentle with it.
I am, but I see people who are reporting this saying, I'm not somebody who slams my laptop open or closed and I baby it. And it's so we don't really have any sense of how widespread, why it's happening to some people and not others. But we do know as of yesterday that Microsoft said they're investigating it. And that's the first time they've said that. They said a limited number of customers have contacted us and reported screens cracking through no fault of their own. And we are evaluating the situation and investigating the root cause of the claims.
You know, do you think Microsoft, under any circumstances, would say an astronomical number of customers have contacted us?
No company.
No. You know. But, you know, I would say both you and I would have heard from an astronomical number of people on Twitter and email if this was happening to a lot of people, right?
Right.
Right.
That makes sense.
I would think.
So here's my one sort of issue. If we've seen it only in the ones that are aluminum, or as far as it seems so far, then how is it an opening sort of screen issue, because this screen is not affected
by the
Alcantara.
Stop touching it. You're going to break it. What are you doing?
You're right. What am I thinking? I need to, I don't know, wear gloves.
How many news reports do you have to read?
How come it seems that the ones that have Alcantara are not being affected. Is there different? I wonder if there's a difference in the actual build of the product between my version and your version.
That's really
aside
weird,
from just the
That's
felt.
That's got to be a weird coincidence. I remember I used to live out west, and we would get the engine steam cleaned on the car, and then the oil would leak. And so before the grease covering the engine actually held the oil inside. And like maybe that's the role that Alcantara plays.
I kind of love that theory.
It holds it together, you know.
You
guys are all dumping on it because it's got like Cheetos and the wrist rest. But actually, that's the thing that's holding it together. It's the glow.
It's a coincidence that you bring that up because I've been researching getting my engine steam cleaned. So it's really odd that you bring that up today.
So the motto is do not
steam clean your engine or the oil will leak.
But we had an older car. But I mean, you know, at the time it was just disappointing because literally it was holding in oil from dripping out of the engine.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So what do? We just hope against hope. Is that the solution for
now? Some people are bringing the laptops into Microsoft stores or the places they bought them, and they're saying, hey, this happened to me and I didn't cause it. And am I under any kind of a warranty? Am I going to have to replace it? And right now, the agents who are responding online and in stores are telling people you're liable for it and you've got to replace it and we're not paying for it. My guess is if this is something Microsoft can document, they're not going to say that because I don't know if you guys remember this, but in 2018, there were some problems with flickering screens on Surface Pro 4s, and Microsoft ended up replacing the devices for free in the end. Right. So I think if this really is something they can prove is a pattern and not the fault of users, I think they're going to have to replace them for free. Mm. That would be my guess.
I will say this, too, because obviously in the Surface world, we're all familiar with the problems of 3.5 years ago, whenever that was, 3-4 years ago, whatever, with Surface Pro 4, and especially with the first gen Surface Book, massive reliability problems that they never really got on top of. But one of the big problems with that event initially was just how silent Microsoft was.
Yeah.
So I will say at the very least, like this time they've acknowledged it, what seems like very early on. And I take that as a hopeful sign too.
Me too. I saw some reports of this dating back to January, but they were very isolated, and now they're kind of piling on, right? And so now that the press has picked up on this.
Yeah, we haven't been talking about this since November, right? And then all of a sudden they finally say something. I mean, it seems like they did jump on it fairly early. So I will at least give them credit for that. I mean, one of the you remember the it's a hard computer science problem was one of the things that had come out of that initial event. I mean, it's not like that, at least not yet. So that's a positive sign.
It is. It is. And they're at a point in their Surface history where you don't want this to start happening, right? Because they're starting to get people liking their devices, and they pass the Consumer Reports hurdle that they had. And I think they know if this really is an issue, they've got to be on top of it, and they've got to get to the agents in the field and tell them, stop telling customers it's their problem, right? And tell them we're looking at it and, you know, hold on, don't panic. So I'm trying not to panic, but I'm kind of panicking. Like every morning now I open my Surface Laptop 3 and I like put my hands on the screen like, are there any cracks?
I got to make sure there are no dust particles anywhere on it so that if you press it, oh boy.
Yeah, don't get any crumbs in there.
You know, don't be eating Cheetos over this thing.
Oh, no, man, but the Alcantara is great for rubbing your Cheeto dust on.
That's right.
Darn it.
No, you are okay, Micah, because I haven't seen anybody with Alcantara saying that this is a problem for them. Weird. I haven't seen a single person say that.
Weird.
Build is on. Now, are we interrupting anything important that you wanted to see? Or
I think the Scott Goo thing was replaying when this started.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we missed that. We streamed Satya Nadella's RGV to CW speech.
That cleverly hidden message.
What was that, by the way?
Oh, you I don't still even don't know. We found out before the end of our stream. It's base 64 for devs. It's his way of saying developers, developers, developers.
I wouldn't give him personal credit for that, but yes.
It was clever. I thought that was clever. Yeah. Do you think somebody said, Mr. Nadella, if you put RGV to CW behind you, the world... Yeah. It will be super cool.
Yeah. I don't think he even knew about it. I think they just said, hey, or stand here. Read that.
You don't think that's his house? Was that his house?
It looked like a set.
That's a good question. I think a lot of those were sets.
It doesn't look like that all the time. I can tell you that.
Well, and then we watched the Imagine Cup, which was better, frankly. Because it didn't have, I don't know, I just felt a little less awkward.
Tell you know why it was better?
Why?
And it was the reason everything was better. Because everything was held to 20 to 30 minutes.
Yes, short.
That honestly, that made it better.
Yeah.
Just get to the point.
I'll agree with you on that.
You know?
Yeah.
I know. Keep things moving. That's always good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
I would have changed the order of things a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me just. So we watched Scott Hanselman, and I had a blast with that because he's sitting in his clearly his own computer. And he loves, you know, he's a real geek. And so he loved playing and pushing all the buttons. And it was really cool. He had a stream deck. We caught the stream deck. And he's making the lights behind him change colors. And, you know, he's just.
And why does he have one of these in his house, you ask? Because
he's a podcaster. That's why.
Okay.
Didn't his kids speak a little view in the door or something too?
Yeah, and his was more natural than the Panos Panay faux.
Every time a child appeared on any video, it was very obviously not
stage.
Natural.
Yeah, stage.
And that was the one thing. You got to give them credit for pulling this thing off. It was awesome overall.
I thought they did great.
I think the stuff they did from home was. I think it's an interesting insight. I think I said this to Brad Mehdi this morning. You know. It's really interesting. You see the executives like Scott Goo or Satya Nadella or whoever, and they're these in their, you know, mansions or whatever. And then there's like these, it's like this guy or woman who works on Edge or this person who, you know, kind of a 20 something, and they're in like an apartment.
I loved it.
You know, with nothing.
It was real. It was genuine.
That stuff was really genuine. Yeah.
I thought it was really great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Now we had to tune out before Scott. In fact, we tuned out. We watched most of Hanselman's piece, but we stopped when he started doing .NET. As soon as it went to Visual Studio, I like the VS Code stuff, of course.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been told I'm going to be bumped ahead in the line on that cool, you know, what do they call it? I love it. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. Holy cow! Let's get started. So, Build continues. It finishes today. It's only a 2-day event. Mm-hmm. It's also
tomorrow's like reruns of content. So streaming. If you miss anything, you can watch tomorrow.
But that's one thing I love about this is that nobody had to pay for it. And everybody was invited.
And look, no one is saying this exactly this way. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of speculation around someday in the future, Microsoft and other companies will have these in-person conferences. Yes.
Yes.
But how will this experience impact what those things look like? Because in the very near future, and then in the future going, you know, forever maybe, there are just going to be people who don't want to come physically and be around that many people.
Right. Yeah. You've spoiled us.
Will they? Yeah. So will they do something like this plus the live event?
Yes, because there are still people who want to get together.
Oh,
you missed that part, right?
Yeah, no, of course. But I mean, you know, like this really ties into what they were saying about Teams as long ago as, you know, February, which sounds like 3 years ago now. But when this work at home thing first started, I think it was, I don't want to say it, it doesn't matter. I don't want to get his name wrong. But one of the corporate vice presidents for Microsoft was saying, look, this is going to change work forever. It is not a temporary thing. Mm. And so if you think about
Jared Spataro. Jared Spataro.
Yeah, probably. I can't remember which one it was, but probably Jared Spataro. Yeah. So I just didn't want to get it wrong. But, you know, the idea is that, look, in the future, we will have these meetings and they'll be in person. But the capabilities of Microsoft Teams allows you to record those meetings. It allows people to come in remotely while it's live. For people who watch it later or even live, there'll be live translations of the language. There'll be automatic textual display of what's being said. You know, there are like all these advantages to doing it both ways at the same time. And I think you could apply that to the conference situation.
Yeah. And you got to figure when they're looking at expenses, the expense of doing build this way versus the expense of having everybody come to Seattle, renting the convention center, all the food.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you have to look at that if you're weighing this.
But they can't just cut it off. Like, in other words,
No.
You know, I don't know what the attendance level at Build was, 5,000, 6,000, something like that, probably.
About that.
Yeah. So maybe in the future, it's, you know, 2 years from now or something, it's 2,000 people want to show up. Mm-hmm. So maybe they can book a smaller venue, but maybe they can do this online component where it's live.
Yeah.
And they repeat sessions like they're doing for different time zones, and people can watch these things from home or at work or whatever the situation is, you know?
Yeah. I think that'd be cool.
That sounds great.
You know? And you know what worked this week? And I was worried about this was how would they hold up under the load of all the people coming in and talking in the stream and watching the stream. And most, I haven't seen many people complain about it going down. Very few, very, very few.
Oh yeah. I wasn't even aware of any. So that's good.
Yeah. So that was a good test. Of how this would all work for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, it was great. Obviously, I mean, the leading news was the Xbox Game Pass thing.
So No, definitely.
That was like really top of mind.
As happens every year, Microsoft brought in new products. They also rang out some of the old products. One of the biggest surprises was Microsoft's streaming gaming service. They bought it for a lot of money, gave it only about a year, brought in some high-profile talent, and then just suddenly closed it down. Technically, it's, I guess, an Xbox story. It's in your Xbox section. But actually, I think it goes much farther than that. And I don't think Mary Jo wants to dial out for this. Microsoft's giving up on Mixer.
In fact, I wrote the story.
This is...
I'm sorry. This is a Mary Jo story,
this is a bit of a shock.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, when they announced it was kind of telling in the middle of the Apple WWDC keynote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why it was a shock. It's like, what?
I wasn't watching the keynote. I was watching just to see if who was like, going to dump news. Hey, and I'm like, oh, Microsoft.
Therat's tweeting up a storm because of Apple. Let's drop the news now.
Right. That yeah, so thinking. I, in some ways, am not surprised about this.
Right. Yep.
I mean, Microsoft was spending so much money. They were paying all these big-time game streamers like Ninja and Shroud, whoever those people are, to stream on their platform to try to get Mixer to be more competitive with Twitch.
They brought Ninja over. That must have cost them millions of dollars. That was only a few months ago.
Millions.
One of those guys got $25 million. I don't remember who's who.
Oh, it would have been Ninja. Yeah. Oh, my God.
But here's the thing. So to Microsoft's credit, because I think this was last fall when that happened, I don't understand that world. I don't understand how one of these goons is worth $25 million, whatever. I'm a gamer and I don't get it. But okay, whatever. If you're serious about this market And this is like anything else. Like you're a sport and you want LeBron James, you got to pay for that. Mm-hmm. If you want to win the championship, you know, that's what you do. So to me, that showed that they were serious about it, right? They tried. Anyway, it didn't work.
The way they originally got into this was they saw what Amazon was doing with Twitch. They saw what Google was doing with YouTube and around gaming. And they're like, you know what? We're in the gaming space. We need a game streaming service. So they bought a company called Beam in 2016, which was just like 30 people or something. And they turned that into Mixer. And then they kept trying to get Mixer to go. And I kind of knew it was in trouble because you'd see a lot of Microsoft MVPs and Microsoft employees streaming, but they would be using Twitch, right? They would never use Mixer.
That's a bad sign. Mary Jo, next year, like, you see me use Max. I'm just saying, but go on.
Right. So it kind of reminds me, in a way, this happening of what happened to them with Nokia. Like, they paid a lot of money, they invested heavily, and then they cut their losses early. Instead of just letting Microsoft this continue to try to go.
But the Microsoft employees would all have Android phones. Well, usually iPhones, actually, back in the day. But
iPhones,
Now they're Android. But, at the time, it was all iPhones.
Yeah, I know. So I guess I wasn't that surprised when I saw them do this, even though they lost. You know, do you think they're going to, at the next earnings, like, talk about writing this off or down?
It's not a billion dollar thing, right?
But
they paid Shroud $10 million, they're telling me in the chat room, for 1 week. And 25 to Ninja, and now they're going to give him a exit fee.
Okay.
Oh, they are? Wow.
But, even if it's hundreds of millions of dollars, I mean, in the context of things, this is not Nokia.
No.
So here's the problem. The dark lining to the story is the two big players in this market, which Mary Jo mentioned, are YouTube and Twitch. And those two services are owned by Microsoft's two biggest cloud competitors, Google and Amazon. Yep. And they can't partner with those guys, even though those services will, of course, be available to people that want to stream from Xbox or Windows or whatever. So they went with the tone-deaf choice of Facebook. You know, beloved Facebook. You know how everyone loves Facebook these days? They went with Facebook. So,
is there somebody else they could have gone with? That's what I don't know because I don't know this market.
Well, they could have someone you would never heard of. Honestly, the way to do this is to not go with anybody and just say, we support all streaming services. Here's a ballot box. You can pick the one you want.
Twitch is the reason they bought Mixer because they were trying to compete with Twitch. So you want to give it, and that's Amazon. There's YouTube, which is,
Duplex. You buy the distant number 5.
Right.
Then you just fail.
So giving it to Facebook Gaming, which is a new service, makes sense. Are they giving it or selling it?
I don't know.
No, neither. They're saying to users, you should go over there, right? They're not sending any of the Mixer team to Facebook Gaming. In fact, some of the Mixer team is going to go to Teams to work on the low bandwidth technology, I think, right?
And according to Business Insider, both Ninja and Shroud are free agents now.
Yeah.
Yes. They're not going to Facebook either.
No, they're not going to Facebook.
I eagerly await the decision when Shroud will announce that he's taking his talents to South Beach.
fishing boat. And we're on Mixer. I mean, I'm sad because it was one of the ways we were streaming. The show's on Mixer.
It's
good.
There's probably a reason why a lot of Microsoft guys were using Twitch, whatever. But,
did you ever try to go on a Windows Insider webcast because they used Mixer? And it was always really, the service just, it didn't hold up. It was always really glitchy and wasn't working. I'm like, okay, guys, what's going on here, right?
It's too bad. So, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
You know, a moment of silence. We could just throw this in a pile of dead Microsoft technology that some people really cared about. And now it's dead.
I know.
I should have bought there that.
With portable media players and
should have bought Zoom. That.
I saw someone blaming you this morning, saying the rot wrecked my day.
It's like, thanks for ruining my day. I'm like, dude,
just don't shoot the messenger.
What do you like? Yeah, shoot the messenger. Yeah. You know, that's a thing, right? Do you read Shakespeare? Come on.
I'm just sad I didn't get on that Ninja and Shroud stock before.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah.
Too late. You all look fine and fit as a fiddle, despite the whiplash you probably suffered Friday and Saturday.
Oh, you have no idea.
Where to begin?
Just to get you up to date. Everybody knows what TikTok is. It's just literally the hottest social media thing going all over the world. It is, in fact, I think the number one app in the United States. It is very popular with the youths, beating Instagram, Snapchat, and the like. It's very much like Vine. It's short videos from 15 seconds to 1 minute, usually set to music. There's a lot of lip syncing going on, but it's also just there's political commentary. Comedian Sarah Cooper does great stuff with her Donald Trump lip syncing. And
I thought it was all about cute kitten videos and people dancing in their living room. So am I missing something?
That's the secret of TikTok is the algorithm watches you as you watch it and then gives you stuff you like.
So did I just betray something about my preferences?
Betrayed a little something.
All
I see is Korean boy bands. I don't know.
I don't get any of those. So there you go.
That's the algorithm at work.
There have been complaints in the past about TikTok and its algorithm, perhaps because it's owned by a company in China called ByteDance, perhaps blocking, fat people. nothing about Uyghurs, nothing about Hong Kong. So there have been complaints about the algorithm in the past, all of which TikTok has apologized for and fixed. As far as I can see, and I use it on both Android and iOS, but on the iOS app, it doesn't even ask for location permissions. It asks for permissions to use the camera and the microphone if and only if you want to record something. If you're just watching, it doesn't know anything.
It's all going back to China, Leo.
It's all going to China. Even TikTok says it's not going to China. It's going to the U.S. and servers in the U.S. and Singapore. Nevertheless,
that's what they say.
And I believe them because, frankly, if you're in the if you're in the armed services, no, you shouldn't have TikTok on your phone as you wanted the Pentagon.
That's right.
I grant you that. You shouldn't have Facebook, you know, Strava, Instagram either.
Somebody might break out into a dance or something.
Then you might want to
be ready. You want to be ready.
But as a normal citizen, I feel like TikTok knows less about me than Facebook or Instagram or a variety of other things I've installed on this phone, including apps from all over the world.
About you and is sending that information to the Chinese government and or the Communist Party of China. I mean, don't you understand the ramifications?
So despite no proof of that or anything else.
Right. It's literally no proof of that.
My suspicion is it might have a little something to do with the TikTok meme that spread about registering for the president's Tulsa campaign event and then not showing up. That was a, we understand, due to a TikTok meme and then due to the K-pop stans, which for reasons I don't know, K-pop fans are called stans. And they apparently jumped on this, registered for a million tickets, much to the fool Brad Parscale, who trumpeted it, say, look, we got a million people registered, little knowing that the way it was set up, anybody could register. None of those showed up. They had a big outdoor thing. It was kind of embarrassing to dismantle it. And, the stadium itself inside wasn't even full in Tulsa. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit, knowing our president and how personally he takes his stuff.
It's just nice to see him going after some company that's not Huawei for a change, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. He's got a love-hate with China. You know, it goes back and forth. So the last thing we heard, he said last week, I'm going to ban it. Unclear under what authority he would ban it. CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, would have the power, I think, to do something about it. They're investigating. But they haven't said anything.
These videos are too viral. Viral is bad.
It's too damn entertaining. That's clear.
Yeah.
I've been going back and forth. Then, by the way, on the Air Force One, he said, I'm gonna shut it down, and I don't want anybody to buy it. At which point, Microsoft, who apparently in behind the scenes have been negotiating for weeks for to buy the U.S. and Australia and New Zealand assets, said, threw up their hands. Then the next day, Satya Nadella calls the president, according to a post on Microsoft's blog, and they
were speed dial number two.
Mr. President, what if we did buy it? And apparently they worked out something. Then later, the president said something really kind of unprecedented. Oh, and we want to cut.
I know. We want to.
Wants a big... we want you to pay the Treasury a lot of money.
That's how our government works.
It's very mob kind of mentality. Like, well, we made the deal, so we should get, you know. Did he ever mention a percentage? Because I didn't see.
No.
But it would...
I mean, key money. Remember that phrase? Key money.
Key. That's a lot, right? Key.
Yeah. Key. Like it was implied. Like tenant. Realtor.
Oh, that's what it meant.
Yeah.
Well, that's all Donald understands is real estate. So anyway,
it'd be a shame if this deal were to fall apart. Is all I'm saying.
So then the negotiations are back on, right?
Right.
Apparently,
but they have until September 15th, or it's off.
They are still actively pursuing this, which blows my mind.
They are.
On this as an opportunity? Like, hey, we're going to get a deal. They're not buying the whole thing. They're only buying the.
They're buying eyeballs. Microsoft loves communities.
They love eyeballs.
They love communities. Yeah. So this is Minecraft, GitHub, LinkedIn. These are all about communities. They love that.
And this is the Youngs. I mean, that's why they bought Minecraft, right? Is we want to get them cradle to grave.
Right. Exactly.
Here's a chance to get people in their teens and 20s.
The problem here, though, is what company, what leadership of what company in its right mind would take on a social networking service now with all of the policing you're going to have to do for hate groups and hate speech and racism and whatever else? It's got to be a nightmare.
Well, you got to think the president might have said, I don't know, to Satya, and whatever you do, you got to make sure you got keep those conservative voices free.
Exactly.
And maybe shut down those K-pop stands. We don't like them.
But the reason they shouldn't buy this company is because they're basically, first of all, TikTok does not want to be sold. Does not want to sell some of its assets to anybody. This is something being forced on them by a foreign government.
Yeah.
This is exactly the kind of thing that the U.S. government says that China does with its companies.
Yep.
Like if Microsoft were to take this part of this company over, it would blow away all of the goodwill it's gotten for all its ethical nonsense since Satya Nadella took over. You're doing this at the behest of the United States government. It's crazy. What a huge mistake.
It is a huge risk. It's a giant risk, right? But I've been trying to find reasons they might do it. And there are reasons they might, right? Besides just wanting to get the use. Are they good reasons? Well, do you remember when Microsoft bought LinkedIn and everybody was like, why? Yeah. And do you remember what they said the reason was?
An early morning phone call freaking out with some, whoever. Anyway, with somebody high up at Microsoft.
You can guess who.
Not understand. And it was like trying to talk me off a cliff. Like, this to me made no sense at the time. I got to tell you, years later,
it was a good idea.
Yep. So, remember what they said?
I thought they paid too much.
No, do you remember why they said? Two reasons. They said, they wanted to have the data. So Microsoft just wants more data. They want to train their AI models with data. They want to use this data to
get from their search engine,
create advertising. Right. Like this has an advertising aspect, right? Like a lot of money is being spent on TikTok for
TikTok
ads.
TikTok has a huge upside. There's a lot of money to be made.
Microsoft's ad business is or flat at the best, right? So there's another synergy.
Is that worth? Like, what's the math on this? Like, is this thing worth $30 billion?
I know.
For 100 million
So LinkedIn,
users?
They paid $26 billion and they've barely done anything with LinkedIn.
Is 30 the number we're talking here?
Yes.
That's the number today that CNBC was saying.
And how much do we give President Trump or the Trump family or whatever?
Exactly. What's the percentage that...
Well, it would be half of an apple big, so 15%.
Yeah. 15%. Look, that's fair.
I don't mean to interrupt. I know you have a list, but I just wanted to just kind of add in here because you've just reminded me of this. This thing is worth supposedly $30 billion, whatever. But this would be like buying, was it Rovio, the company that made Angry Birds at the height when they were the number one app on all the platforms. You know that company's dropped off the face of the earth, right? The problem with TikTok is that it lives in an age where things are very transient. And this thing is not necessarily a platform that's building a foundation for the future. It could literally just come and go.
It would be
so Microsoft.
But you could have said that of Facebook and WhatsApp and Instagram too.
That is true. Oh, that's absolutely true. But I would say I think the world has changed a lot even since then.
Yeah. I think if you're Microsoft, what you've got to be looking at is not, I want to get this cool social media app that might be a flash in the pan, it might not. It's ByteDance's algorithm, if they can get that as part of the deal.
But ByteDance has said, we're going to reveal the algorithm when we call on everybody else to do the same.
They said it's public, but you know it's not totally public, right? Because that's their secret sauce.
You know, we had Matt Cutts on Twit on Sunday. He's the administrator of the United States Digital Service, but also an early Googler. And he said, it's not like the Google algorithm. He said, I could write that algorithm in one page. It's a fairly simple algorithm.
It's not like the recipe for KFC chicken, guys. This is complicated.
Basically, he said, you watch engagement. Stuff that gets high engagement, you promote. Yep. Stuff that gets low engagement, you bury. And it's all you need to do.
Yeah.
They've done it very well. And what's the trick, the hard work that they've done is not the algorithm. It's making a platform that people want to put stuff on. Because you can have an algorithm, but unless you have stuff feeding it, they need millions of videos every week going in there so that they can surface the few good ones and let the rest fade away. And they made a really powerful tool. And it turned out there were a lot of people from the Vine community and others, YouTubers and stuff, who understood this medium. The Musical.ly, they bought Musical.ly, which was turns out to have been a masterstroke. That got a whole bunch of new people in there. Yeah. And it's honestly, Carson's saying this in the chat room right now, it's an art form. It's a new medium.
Yeah.
And the kids are embracing it. It's a little annoying that the United States government essentially is encouraging Microsoft to steal it.
Right. That's the problem. That Microsoft might actually do it, I think will be a stain on that company that it may not recover from.
Yeah. Yep. So the other thing I'm sure they're looking at, so we talked about advertising, we talked about the algorithm. So the words, these two words come up a lot when you research us a little bit. It's called interest graph. So you know how Microsoft's big on the idea of these graphs, like the social graph and the work graph and this graph. So they've got this thing at TikTok called the interest graph that's related to the algorithm. So the idea is, you don't need to have friends on TikTok to sign up. Like it just kind of uses your interests to kind of grow the set of data that they have about you. And then they get more and more accurate in what they feed you. So if you're Microsoft and you're all about AI and algorithms and graphs, you see all these words, then you see them talking about social good, which fits in with your culture. And you're like, you know what? This looks like a good fit, and we're gonna let it run by itself, just like we're doing with LinkedIn, and we're just gonna help them build it, and we're not gonna try to interfere, and we're gonna let it stay branded TikTok, and there
we
go.
I would expect that, and that would be great. They'd get the data they want.
Yep.
Look, you change it.
$30 billion, though. This is the thing.
I know.
I don't know.
But that's the thing.
$26 billion for LinkedIn. $26 billion for LinkedIn. What have they got from LinkedIn?
I still don't understand it. Well, they've done nothing with it. I think it's
they've integrated a couple things like Dynamics 365 with LinkedIn and some learning apps.
But we don't know what the value of the data that they've got from LinkedIn is.
Yeah.
What's the user base on LinkedIn look like? Does anybody know the user count?
Yep.
You know, active users or whatever.
I'll look it up for you.
Yeah.
And there's
800 million on TikTok worldwide, and 100 million of those or 200 million is US, right? LinkedIn has over 575 million users, 260 million monthly active users.
It's not that big. It's actually smaller than Twitter.
It's not that big. It's much smaller than TikTok.
It's like a third size. So, the problem with LinkedIn, I would say, is that as an acquisition is though the people on LinkedIn are also transient in a way because sometimes they're looking for a job and most of the times they're not, but at least they're professionals. And I think that kind of fits into the whole Microsoft IT space, whatever. Yeah. TikTok, I don't know. This is not a good demographic for Microsoft. I don't consider this a major problem, but one thing that people will point out is that Microsoft's not exactly a credible consumer technology company at this point.
Yeah.
Here's another. They could leave it alone. Here's a political question, not a business question. You could say on the one hand, they might be doing this to curry favor with the White House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is somewhat risky since I don't know if the current tenant is going to be
longer. I actually don't see it that way. But
that's one thing you could say. Certainly TikTok's trying to do that. They said, oh, no, we're going to hire 10,000 people in the U.S. We've got a U.S. CEO, which the president calls a puppet.
That's what Broadcom did. Remember when Broadcom wanted to buy Qualcomm? They were going to move their headquarters to the United States, or we're going to do all this stuff.
Didn't do it. And then the other thing is, politically, you might make a friend in the White House, but you're certainly making an enemy in one of the largest economies in the world, much larger than the U.S. economy. That's China.
Right. One that you've had struggled to get any foothold in whatsoever.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering. What is Microsoft's relationship with the Chinese market? Do they want that market?
Yeah, they want that market.
Well, this would be the kiss of death.
Yeah.
That'd be it.
I wouldn't worry about it being attached to the current administration. I don't actually view it that way. I can't write anything about a topic like this without getting a bunch of partisan political nonsense in my comments, but it really doesn't to me have any, that's not the issue. It doesn't matter who the president is. If the United States government unilaterally decides that this company is bad and we're going to ban it, and then we'll let Microsoft seize some percent of its assets and then that makes it okay. I'm sorry, but that kind of behavior, if that happened in China, we would never stop complaining about it. There would be action against the, you know, I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing that our government accuses China of. And it's just hypocritical. And for Microsoft to be a party to that, for that to be the way this came about, this company that does not want to be sold, it's like we're annexing Austria or something. What are you talking about? That's crazy. Oh, it's crazy.
That's why it's shocking to me that somebody with as much savvy as Satya Nadella would take this risk for with very little business upside. Would take this risk.
I think there's a ton of business upside.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's so good that they can't turn around.
I think that's the problem. They're like, see all these things that they want, the data, the algorithm, the interest graph.
So I think you're onto something, because the one thing I think everyone can agree on is that Microsoft has bet its future on the cloud. But one of the problems that it has is, you know, a lot of its infrastructure is dedicated to what is essentially private businesses. They're not getting access to that data. They can't use it to build their graph and so forth. And so they are losing out to Google in the kind of the public search space, obviously, by a huge margin. And what that means is they don't get as much data to fill in the public parts of the graph. And Bing just is, you know, and maybe these other networks, LinkedIn is good for work type graph. TikTok could work on the consumer side, gives it a lot more exposure to the outside world than it would have otherwise. So you could kind of make that argument, but you really got to weigh that against the downsides, which I just feel are.
Yeah, you do.
Here's another theory. Microsoft misjudged this. Satya Nadella misjudged this. Thought he would be seen as a savior.
Right.
Of a product that millions of American teenagers and young people love, that they'd be seen as a savior because otherwise it was going to be shut down.
But that's like saying, hey, guys, don't worry. We figured out something for TikTok. Oldsmobile is going to buy it. And they'd be like, I'm sorry, who?
Well, like, Microsoft's better known to that audience than Oldsmobile.
Yeah, but they're better known as they might as well make couches or.
Right.
I mean, they're like, didn't they make the rotary phones? Is that who Microsoft is?
Well, they might still have ambitions with the Youngs. They do know Minecraft.
They do, but
I know. So here's where the synergies are.
But that's what I'm saying. I think it's a misjudgment because I think, and I bet you, I'm going to predict that this week Microsoft will pull out because I think they did not understand what it would look like. No. What it would look like.
I feel bad about this. I'm nervous. I think they're going to charge forward.
I do too. I think they're going to charge full steam ahead because you got to think how does Satya Nadella make a decision? He doesn't just sit at home reading poetry and say, you know, I want to be a savior today, right?
You don't know that, Mary Jo.
I do know that. He goes in with the senior leadership team, who are a bunch of very practical people, and Frank Shaw, his like PR handler, and they all have talked about is this going to look like if these negotiations were going on for weeks before we found out on Friday. They've thought this through way beyond what we think they've thought through.
By the way, that could be. And I the problem, though, is once you get the president stepping in and wishy-washing his way back and forth.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, you're complicit in something.
Yes, that's my point.
And frankly,
as soon as he said, I want to cut. Yep.
Then you should have been like, I'm done.
Now you're in a mob mentality. You're working with Tony Soprano. And if I were,
just complain about the vig over at Apple, we're not giving you a fee. What are you talking about?
So, guys, can I say one thing here? Does anyone really take anything he says seriously, Trump?
Back to Nadella?
Like,
oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, because he's still the president.
Because he's still the leader of the free world. This is a really fun story for the media. But when he said that, I didn't even write it up because I'm like, yeah, he says a lot of things that are completely off the cuff and ridiculous. Right. And we shouldn't give them the weight.
He's a moron, for sure. You're both right, by the way. I, like you, try to ignore everything he says. And everything he says, tomorrow you could turn around and
absolutely
completely.
You could be tarred with that brush. Well, exactly. You lie down with a dog, you're going to get up with fleas. Yes. And I think there's a risk. I think, you know, the rumor was Apple was also in the running. And they said, no. Right.
They're like, nope.
You know who actually would make most sense? And I notice I hear nary a peep from them is Google.
I bet
Microsoft sees this as their YouTube.
Me too. Yes. Yeah. In fact, I saw an article today that said TikTok is YouTube.
Yeah.
That's what they said.
By the way, that's a good point because the one thing YouTube is also viral in its own way. And I mean, I watch a ton of YouTube personally, but I will say in the same way that we read a lot less than we used to, even our attention span for watching video content has gone down and down and down. And so when you think about a 22-minute sitcom versus a, what were you saying, a 60-second or however long these things can be, I mean, that's pretty much where we're trending, isn't it? It's like the soundbite version of a video, basically.
It's Quibi if it worked.
Quibi, yes, if it worked. See, that reference isn't going to mean anything to anyone in about 3 months.
No,
so I think they're in the they're in the boardroom. Sacha, Amy, Phil Spencer, they're all talking, right? And they're like, okay, here's the list of pros. Here's the list of cons. You know what? They're both kind of equal.
So I'm just going to make
Friday.
13th presentation mode or whatever it's called. I don't think they're actually in a room.
Okay. But I'm saying I think the calculus changed dramatically on Friday. In fact, Microsoft quickly stepped back. And they stepped back based on one sentence in the middle of a conversation on Air Force One. And they said, we are so sorry we're dealing with this clown.
Well, I think, by the way, everyone who's dealt with this person has had that experience. They're like, wait a minute, that's what he makes decisions?
Yeah.
I spend more time picking an orange in the supermarket. Yeah. What are we talking about here? I mean, it's crazy.
I'm going to predict, the president is not going to ban TikTok anymore. I mean, this is all saber-rattling. This is all his, in theory, how he negotiates. That's not really on the table. It would be
because there are actual people behind the scenes who start scrambling to say, do we actually have the legal right to do this? We don't.
We do it? Executive order? You know how long that's going to be in court? And then I think Microsoft's going to, if that doesn't happen, it's going to step away. I think they would like to look like a savior. They would love to have the next YouTube. But boy, you don't want to look like you're in cahoots with the mob. Strong-arming a Chinese company—that's going to kill their. Their relationship with China forever.
Right. This also cuts the heart of the whole antitrust problem, right? So everyone knows. You know, we talk about monopolies. It's okay to have a monopoly. You know, the problem is when you have a monopoly, you have to behave differently, et cetera, et cetera. One of the other problems with monopolies is if you gain that monopoly illegally. So if Microsoft actually had a hit with this thing, that this would always be the stain at the beginning of it. How did you get it again?
Yeah.
They were looking for a buyer and you bought it? No, not exactly. I see. You stole it from them? Oh, I see.
So can another very American company step in and make a counterbid?
A very American company.
You know, Trump said if it's not Microsoft, it's some very it's going to be some other very American company.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, Amazon would be an obvious choice. You're right about Google as well is a good choice.
Google.
Well, Trump's never going to let Amazon get it because he sees Amazon as the Washington
Jeff Bezos. Yeah.
I'm glad these decisions are all being made logically.
Notice that Microsoft was not invited to testify last week. They were one of the big five that wasn't there.
We're left out. Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's telling.
Bigger than four of those companies.
Yeah.
which is amazing.
I think that shows you that the sun is shining right now on Microsoft from Capitol Hill. And this is so
they benefited, by the way, with that DOG Jedi contract.
That's right.
Jeff Bezos would argue that was stolen from them.
That's
right. And maybe this has been Microsoft, you know?
We're going to find out who wins Jedi in the next couple weeks.
The ends justifies the means.
Mm. No, but that's going back. Bill Gates would have done it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No question.
But of course, Bill Gates
would have done it.
I don't know if Microsoft is really run, but it's like a little puppet act, and it's Bill Gates down there when he's not spreading COVID. He's, you know, controlling Microsoft.
Yeah.
I just, I don't see it happening. Yeah, somebody says, Coke Industries should buy it. Go right along with the towels and the.
Anyway,
I'm not ready to say it's not going to happen. I'm not ready to say
that. I wish they would not do it. I wish I would see any indication they're backing away. I'm really nervous they're going to do it.
Okay, and I'm going to say it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
A million years.
Yeah. Really do.
Yeah. You know, if they back away, they'll have people saying, good job, Microsoft. That was the right choice, right? I don't think they'll look like somebody who didn't bail them out. They'll look like,
altruistic.
You know, we wanted to do it, you guys, but we
couldn't. It's good business, but we can't bring ourselves to.
Yeah, they're not going to come out publicly and say, look, we didn't want to be inclusion with the president and you know, look like a mobster. Right. But we'll all know that was the reason, and that's great.
This week, you're going to see that. I guarantee you.
You do? Really?
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
I think they're going to write it out.
That's so dumb. Well, that's just dumb. There's 1.3 billion people in China. That's a big market.
It is.
Yep.
Trump's going to be gone in January. Or if he's not, then, well, it doesn't matter anyway. Yeah. So what do you gain? I mean, I see this jewel. It's like you're looking at the Hope Diamond and thinking, can I get around that security? But that's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Or maybe they get the deal structured in a way that they get the parts they want and they leave the other parts to investors.
I don't know how,
but maybe they say, you know what? We'll run all the data in Azure. So we'll get that business, right? We'll keep all the user data in Azure in our data centers. And then we're going to let the investors in TikTok, who we've heard are also part of this negotiation, they can figure out the front end and who runs the service.
Oh.
There may be some finagling. That's possible.
Right. That's what I mean.
Face-saving negotiation so that Trump looks like he got something done.
Right.
Microsoft maybe gets a little bit of what they want, and TikTok gets to continue on. You know, maybe Microsoft says, you know, all you have to do is run your servers.
That's like saying, hey, look, you're going to get off the desert island. You just have to eat your foot. You know, like, you're going to get off. No, you're going to live. It's okay. You're going to see another day.
What about this scenario? TikTok does a deal. We're going to run any data coming out of the U.S. goes to Azure in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and nowhere else. We don't see it. No one sees it. We still own it, but no one sees it. Everyone saves face. Microsoft gets a little win, not a big win. What about that?
What does it mean, though, to store data in the United States and not see it and use it? I mean, I don't.
I know.
Well, isn't that the fear that the data is sent, which is not, but.
I get it. Yeah.
It's going to be the Chinese government. President Xi knocks on the door and says, hey, let me see what Leo Laporte's been TikToking lately.
Well, yeah, I mean, can't President Xi VPN into the United States?
He's probably got people sitting on all of the servers. I don't know.
I don't know how you can separate it really,
to be fair. But I don't think they're going to totally step away because this has been going on for weeks. Like they've got some idea and some plan. They do.
For sure. Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
I just screwed up.
I'm trying to see the upside and I just.
I know. I think there's a lot of publicity downside to this. But if you're Microsoft and you're looking at the prize is the data and the AI and the algorithm and the graph, all those things. They must just be like so tantalizing. It's like, we want that. Okay, we got to figure out how to make it look good that we're taking it.
I mean, I just still don't get that. I really just don't get this.
They don't need to do that. Why, Microsoft? Why?
I know. Yeah. Well, because Bing, Bing is such a tiny percentage of the search market compared to Google.
Data. Yeah.
They want that data. They need it. They need it to feed all this AI work they're doing. Like, data sets need to be bigger and bigger and bigger. Where do you get the consumer data set if you don't have consumer customers, right? They don't have a lot of consumer customers, except for Xbox.
The data thing is the one thing that makes sense. Yeah, for sure.
But I just, you know, I've been thinking this about this a long time. There is no problem with TikTok. That there's nothing that needs to be solved with TikTok right now. And this is all manufactured. Like much of what comes out of the White House, it's all manufactured for the base. And, you know, along with the Chinese virus, we got the Chinese virus videos, you know, the viral videos. And I've been thinking long and hard about it. You can maybe make a case with Huawei and 5G. But there's no reason why Huawei phones, the number one phones in the world, are not sold in the United States. That's just petty xenophobia. And I think this is more of the same.
I agree.
And then if that's the case, Microsoft really looks like an opportunist here.
But that's exactly right. That's literally the heart of my problem with this. You are colluding with that.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your $30 billion purchase.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Okay.
It's a huge, huge mistake.
See, that wasn't a bad rant, Mary Jo.
No, it wasn't. Didn't even need the gong.
We were all in agreement. We all gonged each other.
You know what? We should place bets on when you think the deal will be scuttled, because you're way more aggressive on this being scuttled this week than we are.
I mean, it's already Wednesday.
You get two more days.
Yeah, it's a little hard to do it this week, but maybe.
But I almost feel like they need to announce something this week.
I think they should do it this week. I think, honestly, I think they're sitting right now. Chris is not listening to us right now. Chris Capicella is in there.
He's in a meeting.
He's in the meeting. I wish Chris were listening.
First of all, he's on his Peloton. He's got us on one screen. He's got the senior leadership team on the other. You know?
Feel the burn, Chris. Feel the burn. How do you like your duo, Mary Jo? You can finally talk about it.
I know. So my review was very similar to a lot of the other reviews that I saw, which was the hardware is amazing. The software, not quite so much.
Yeah. They pushed out a pretty big update the minute I got mine out of the box. And I'm sure the reviewers got theirs too.
Well, you know, when we got that update, so here's a little inside story on that. We were supposed to get that update on September 10th, the day the reviews came out. And I think they thought better of that because they were like, wait, we better give them this update to stabilize things before they do their reviews, right? So we got it a week ahead, which was good.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
What
do you think?
I agree with you. Beautiful hardware.
Yep.
In fact, it makes me even more interested in the Neo. Because the Neo will be a big version of this running Windows 10X with a keyboard. Because that's one of my complaints about this is the form factor, which is really like a little book, cute little book, does not lend itself well to typing. So you either have to put it down, fold it up, and it doesn't really, the accelerometer is kind of imperfect. But, you know, that's true on all phones.
What would the keyboard look like? Like, in which orientation do you see using it with a keyboard?
Well, there's a couple of things you can do. You know, if you do it like you would do it normally on a phone, you'll probably fold it over. But then you have a weird 3:2 aspect ratio phone.
But if you could open that thing and have it be flat, and maybe you had like a Bluetooth keyboard or something, had like a little slot in it, something was sitting there angled.
That's why the Neo is interesting. That's kind of what the Neo is going to do, right?
You also can type this way, like put it vertically have the keyboard
This
be
is
the
where
bottom.
The software gets funky.
It does.
Because... And actually, Lou M.M., who works for Microsoft, and he's been dogfooding this for a lot longer than me, said the accelerometer works better if it's flat. So you do the flip-flop, the Fosbury flop. Oh, there you go. And it did it, right? And now you slightly close it, put it down delicately so it doesn't flip back. And now I wish can you give me an over-the-shoulder shot, John or Aunt, somebody? Because I want to show what it looks like. This is actually very usable. It's a bigger keyboard than you would normally
have. So it's a mini, it's smaller than a Surface Go.
It is.
Go. Yep. It's the Surface Go Junior.
So you also can use it in landscape mode with the keyboard spanning across both screens or on one screen or the other. So if you want to type one fingered on one screen or the other while it's open, which I could not master to save my life.
Yeah, this is no way to type. And then to get it to dual screen, you unlock. Oh no, I just launched these. This is the problem with it. It's a little finicky about the touches. You drag it. Let's see. Open OneNote, drag it up, and then drag it over. And when both screens are lit, now it's dual screen. And then now, so I have the OneNote stuff on the left, and Outlook works this way too. And that's actually not, that ain't bad.
Yeah, no, but what do you, I mean, bad. How often do you need that? You know what I mean?
Well, and also it's fatiguing because you really do kind of have to hold it like this, like an open book.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fatiguing.
It is. Okay. I'm so glad to hear you say that because I didn't put that in my review because I was like, oh, everyone's going to say, oh, she's got a weak wrist. She can't hold this thing up. But it's a half a pound plus the bumper, right? And you're holding this thing. And after a while, my hand was like, ugh.
But here's the thing.
It's not a natural position.
The two screens, though, did you start painting or become creative in any way? Was there a...
you did know I start what? Baking and more again, things?
I can't get a shot of it, so I can't really show you. But the groups, the app groups, really are cool. In fact, I'll be honest with you. If it weren't $1,400, I would say this is the best chess wallet I've ever had. I have my chess book here on the Kindle. I have my chess set here, my board, my analysis, my Stockfish. Yeah. This is a great... So this is an example of the dual use, where you have two apps open at once. And actually, this is a great way... YouTube TV and I don't know, Twitter. You could have open YouTube TV and Twitter. Yeah. And so that's actually, I have YouTube TV and Edge. And so that's kind of nice. And it's actually great for watching TV because
I just couldn't figure out. I couldn't figure out use cases for the two apps side by side. Like you hear that and you're like, oh yeah, cool. And then you're like, okay, what two apps would I put side by side that I need to look at the exact same time?
See, isn't that cute? The TV's like this, and it's sitting like a Smurfus.
Yeah.
And I got the website here, so I could have Twitter open here, and I could be tweeting and TV. Yeah. And
remember, this was short-lived, but for a little while on TV, they used to promote these things called two-screen experiences.
Right.
Like you'd watch The Walking Dead in season two or three, and you're like, you know, get your laptop ready. You know, and because so you'd have like some extra thing, like a chat window or something, and then you'd have TV, obviously, a new TV screen.
Actually,
it sounds like that kind of thing.
Yeah. So part of the reason I think people didn't like the software is it's just not traditional Android. So it's disconcerting because some of the gestures, for instance, normally this would be return to home swiping up, and it isn't. Just tapping. It took me a while to figure out. You just tap the bottom to return to home. There, I got my picture in picture. So they've changed the gestures a little bit.
You can turn off gestures, as I'm sure you figured out.
Well, it's funny because I have gestures turned off, but I still have the back button and the recent button.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. I wanted the back button.
Yeah, you need it because it's
but
very
it
hard to get to recents.
Yeah, but, it ships without that on. And so then you're kind of like, I'm like totally without an orientation or a start place, right? You're like, what do I do, right?
Hey, engineers.
I'm so sad I didn't get one of these.
Engineers, can I get some help here? Can you please put an over-the-shoulder? I'm sorry, I have to do this. My big mistake
I think it's good.
When I set up this network was to let anybody else be involved. I'm sending you all home. So now I don't even remember what we were talking about now.
The whole idea of turning off Android gestures.
Oh, yeah, I have them here.
And going back to the three-button navigation, that helps a lot.
Because the gestures are different. The other thing, and this is minor, but for the longest time I was trying to get to the settings by hitting this button, this gear button.
Right.
Oh, no, that's the brightness button. Look how close that looks to the gear button. That's just a Microsoft thing. You could fix that, Microsoft. Maybe you should. But I think I have gestures. Let me just see. I think I have it. Gestures.
If you have the home button.
Oh,
and the back button,
I turned on three-button navigation. See, if you turn on gesture navigation, it's not usable because...
It's not.
Look what happened. I don't know why all these things just opened.
It's crazy.
Go away. So that's the other problem. And now it's dead, by the
possessed.
Yeah, it's possessed. Now, that's software. They could fix that.
Yeah, I think they can fix it.
See, it's software. Not doing. Oh, wait a minute. Now I'm in gesture mode. Never mind. So that's back to the gesture. Okay. So maybe I can get used to that. Yeah, because there's recents.
For me, the problem with the gestures was, first, if you've never used Android gestures, you have to learn that. And then Microsoft layers its own gestures on top of Android gestures.
It's non-standard. Right. Yeah. So that is a little bit of the problem.
I'm sorry.
I like this, though.
If you look at how elegant the Galaxy Z Fold 2 thing is, I mean, this just looks unready, you know?
I like the launcher.
Love the launcher. Normally, I switch my launcher. But isn't this good here like this? Yeah. And this is customizable. This is the left side. And so that makes sense. You know, it's little things like the way the icons here kind of get together and then spread apart.
They move all by, like, I never could figure out why do they show up on one side or the other, right? Like, especially trying to open the camera, right?
Oh, the camera's terrible.
The camera always opens to selfie first.
Yeah.
Unless you open the camera on the left.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yep. But how do I get it to the left?
Exactly. Right. So you have to fold your...
I'll do it this way. Okay. Selfie, see? But then... But that's what's supposed to happen. See, then when you do this...
Yep.
This thing but is it also... Doesn't. The double tap to switch screens is dumb.
I know.
Yep. Guys, I'm sorry. I was completely wrong. Haunted. This thing's awesome. I'm sorry I ever complained about it.
I don't want to make this sound so negative. I actually like it.
You know what? I like the concepts, and I like that they're trying something new. But they came out with this so early. Like, it's not ready to sell to people, I don't feel like.
Yeah, I feel like they rushed
it. There you go. You got it.
So now that did it and may turn into a camera. But this is a potato camera, and that's the other problem. It's not a good camera. But I think the really – now I understand why they said it's not a phone. It isn't. It's a little computer. And honestly, nobody should buy this unless they can afford to have this and a phone.
Yeah.
That's the real problem. This you wouldn't want this for your standalone phone. For instance, when you close it, there's no indication that you have a notification at all.
Nope.
There's no information.
You have to do the peak mode.
So you have to go in here. And to be fair, this fingerprint works great. That's a good choice.
It does.
It's a separate from the on-off switch, but it works great. It's such a beautiful piece of hardware. I'm actually glad I own it. It was expensive. I had to buy it, but I'm kind of glad I own it. I think it's a really elegantly designed. I think it is a tablet, and the way I primarily use it is a tablet. I have yet to really use it in this mode where where you have it two things
band.
And you do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I feel like in that view,
here's the reason.
Sense.
Look at that. See, So you guys are wearing masks, but if I scroll it, so the screen thinks there's something where the hinge is.
Yeah.
Now, now you're in the witness protection program.
That is kind of strange. Okay.
Yeah, every app should say, "Oh no, there's two screens."
I bet they did that on purpose.
Why?
Because they don't want an offset. Like, maybe it would be horrible for
video. It
would
be offset. But there's things like when I do my crossword puzzles, and this should be, in theory, a perfect crossword puzzle machine.
Yeah.
But you can't do it that way because you're missing a whole row of entries. And there's no scrolling.
There's no way you can't scroll. Yep. Yeah.
So that's a failure. Now, Google Maps.
Yeah, they're counting on developers to fix their apps
shouldn't.
For this.
But if Microsoft doesn't, why would the developer?
See what's happening right there. Like, you're holding the thing sideways. It doesn't rotate by itself.
It works better if it's flat like this. And then you can tent it.
You know, it would work great if it was a single screen mini tablet.
But remember, a lot of phones, including my iPhone, the accelerometer is wonky. You'd think this would work better. On all
phones. I find accelerometers are often too touchy.
And so it's going whoop. Yeah. So maybe that's a tunable feature. Yeah. But I mean, I think if you're using Teams or Skype in this mode, it's great.
Teams is the perfect app for this phone.
Because you'd want the camera.
I feel like if you have a meeting on one side and you have to look at a document they're talking about in the meeting, there's your perfect use case for this.
And that's why the Neo is getting exciting for me. There's a little bug. I'm not sure if it's in the Kindle app or not, but I turned off the cool page turn in Kindle because it was jumping pages and that wasn't good. So I have to, let me turn it back on though. Look, see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. Supposedly Google Maps has been updated now. Let me just see out of curiosity to understand the dual screen somehow. But, you know, I don't know. Where's Maps? M, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So if I do this, let's see. No, see, still, like, I've made work disappear. Oh, you can't, so bright, I'm sorry. Let me turn down the brightness. This time I won't use that gear, I'll use this gear. All right, now you can see it. So you can see, you know, stuff's still hiding in the gap.
Yep. You got to move things around.
But it's nice to have a map at this size. I mean,
yeah, it is.
You know, I have to remember now. Let's see, what else was I going to show you? Well, the Kindle's so awesome.
The Kindle app's cool.
If you could just say, look, I just wanted a $1,400 Kindle and I'm really happy now. This would be a great choice if you have that much money to burn. Where's the settings?
You know, I always talk about I only want to carry two devices, and a lot of times I do carry a Kindle, laptop, and a phone. So this would replace the Kindle if it could replace my phone, but it can't.
What a great reading experience. This actually looks like a book.
Yep.
You know?
Why is that important? Books are old-fashioned.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, books are the way we used to do
this
things.
This is what I want on the airplane. But I don't want it to be my phone. I want it to be my little mini-bitty computer.
Yeah.
But this will be great. Someday I'll fly again, and this will be great to take on the airplane, to watch TV, to read books, to do that dual screen thing for things like, you know, chess study. It's great. But you still need a phone for notifications and stuff like that. Because this is dopey. This is just not.
Yeah. You got to use it with the earbuds. It's weird otherwise.
Yeah. Or the speaker, if there's nobody around.
Or the speaker.
And it doesn't have a great speaker. It's a mono speaker, but it's good enough for a phone call. I actually have been listening to books on it, which is fine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not a complete failure. And I really don't want people to take the negative reviews as like, oh, they should just kill this.
Right. I don't think they're going to. The rumor is they're already building version 2 for next year. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And presumably the Duo 2 will be even better.
I would hope so. That seems like the bar.
It's beautiful hardware.
It really is. Great. The hardware is amazing. It is.
They need a better camera, but again, I don't think anybody would want this as their sole phone. This is your work phone, maybe. Right? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I want it to be a device I can take to an office and plug into a monitor and have it be my work computer.
Samsung does this. What is wrong with you two?
I know.
Yeah, but that's janky.
Samsung does it, but Samsung phones are terrible because of the Samsung ecosystem.
Right.
Like, I don't want all the stuff.
This is a
Samsung
very Microsoft.
I don't want all that.
Paul, do you have the Fold?
No.
Are you going to get the Fold?
Nope. It's too expensive. Yeah.
$2,000.
Yeah. I wish I could afford it, but there's a lot of other stuff I have to get, and this is an expensive quarter, and we don't have a lot of money, so I can't. See, now it's doing the thing that really bugs me, which is it's just not responding. Oh, now it responded, like later.
Yeah.
So the response is a problem. Yeah. But I love this idea, and now I can show you. I mean, first I have to flatten it, then I have to do that.
This is great.
I have to bang it 3 times on the desk.
Come on, baby.
Everyone watching. Leo actually knows a thing or two about tech.
Come on, baby.
Exactly.
I know you can
little
do
trouble.
It. I broke it. So, but that's a nice way to watch TV is in the little with a little Smurfus book, because that's what this is. It's a little Smurfus laptop, and I do think that the Smurfus Neo will be great.
Jeez, based on this?
Yes, because it'll be bigger.
Why?
It'll have a keyboard that slides out. It'll be this because this is a really interesting form factor.
You know, let me just throw like one idea out here. They thought this was good enough to ship in its current form. They delayed the Surface Neo because the software wasn't ready.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, this is what they decided to ship. Can you even imagine how terrible Windows 10X must be right now? Am I the only one seeing this?
We've buried the biggest story of the week.
Yeah, Halo 3 ODST is out this week.
I meant Bethesda, baby. Yep. Somebody was pointing out, I think it was in Forbes, they said, you know, it's not like Sony could do this. Only a company with deep pockets could pay $7.5 billion to acquire a game company.
The same price they paid for GitHub, by the way.
Wow.
About the same as Nokia as well. And it's just measuring things in Nokia. We'll just say that Microsoft is acquiring Bethesda for one Nokia.
That's kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm a little more bullish on this, though, than I was on the Nokia purchase. I think this is going to be good.
Right? Yeah, sure. I mean, I think this makes a ton more sense than TikTok.
Yeah.
Throw that out there. Yeah. I mean.
I think it makes more sense than that.
Yeah. This also kind of sends a message about how serious they are about this market, because I think a lot of people, and I've certainly gone down this road in the past, have said that, you know, maybe they should spin off Xbox. This doesn't necessarily make any sense. And then as we move into the cloud era and cloud-based gaming, you kind of see how Microsoft might want to stick with it. But the big dig against Xbox has been game studios, exclusive games, and so forth. And I think I don't remember the exact numbers, but Sony is somewhere 13 or 14, and Microsoft has 21, 22, something like that. I mean, they have more game studios than Sony does now. So
wow,
and these are some great games.
So Bethesda is, of course, best known. Well, I don't know. I like the Elder Scrolls. That's Skyrim. I'm a big fan of that. They also do Doom.
Yep.
They
own all the id stuff, right? So it's everything that
all the id stuff. Commander Keen. Nice.
Yeah, going back, you know, Quake, all the Quake games, all the Doom games.
Guys, wait, what about Wolfenstein?
Wolfenstein.
Yeah, Wolfenstein.
The game actually, for beer drinkers. Yeah.
That's the only reason I care about that. The Stein.
Okay. Yeah. The Stein. It's not what you think it is. Yeah. It's been rejiggered several times. It's a kind of a modern shooter now, but it's
the first game I fell in love with on an Apple II when they had, they didn't even have a sound chip.
Castle Wolfenstein.
They didn't even have a sound chip. So all the Nazis were going,
it was Wolfenstein 3D.
Yeah.
And then it was, so then
when
it
this
got
announced
into,
Monday,
mein Leben.
Can I just,
you know,
mein Leben.
Can I just say, when I saw this announced Monday, I had to wait to write it because I was like, who is Bethesda Softworks? Never heard of them.
Right. Oh, and let's not forget Fallout. Another another one I
awesome
love. Love Fallout. Yep. So this is a studio with some real classic titles. The IP they bought alone is probably worth the $7.5 billion.
Yeah, and they're an ongoing concern, right? These aren't games like retro games from the past necessarily. These are, you know, new Fallout 76 is what came out last year or whatever. I mean,
yeah, it's good. It's fun.
The new Doom is obviously done really well. It's a big deal. That's good.
What did Microsoft pay for Minecraft? Like half that, right?
Two point five,
third of that,
maybe.
Okay.
I thought. So, does that sound right, Mary Jo?
They actually bought ZeniMax, right, which is the parent company of Bethesda. So to be perfectly accurate, but nobody knows who ZeniMax is. But
$2.5 billion.
Bethesda Softworks, either for that matter. But
Mary Jo,
yes,
I think some of us do.
I know some people do.
It's a venerated name, actually.
I had never heard of it. Yeah. I'm not kidding. Like I said to people, I've never heard of it, and they're like, "Come on, you've played Skyrim." I'm like, "No, I haven't."
Oh, Skyrim's awesome.
That's a silly thing to say, but
no, I can't see Mary Jo playing Skyrim, but it is a beautiful.
I don't
game.
Even know what it is, but okay. Yeah. Anyway, you know, I covered it though because it's an acquisition and it's a big one, right? And I cover Microsoft, so I have to know about it.
Think of the mashups. I can't wait for Minecraft Doom.
But now that it's that probably exists. That has to exist, right?
Wolfenstein Minecraft.
Yeah. So the bigger deal, though, is that now, because they're a Microsoft studio, these new games, as they come out, will be made available on Xbox Game Pass day and date, right? So this is really...
That's huge to me.
Part of that cloud/subscription push that Microsoft has just started. And yeah, I mean, this is, we're getting to the point for a gamer where Xbox Game Pass might be getting into no-brainer territory, you know? Smart.
Chat room's having fun coming up with mashups. Pit Fallout will be fun. Knox Harrington says, in the new Halo, Master Chief will be sidelined by an arrow to the knee. That's if Mary Jo doesn't know the name Bethesda, she's definitely not going to get that.
You know what? But I know that reference now because someone used it on me on Twitter.
So. Yeah, yeah. It's a classic Skyrim line. I think this is going to be very interesting. And by the way, it makes me cry even more that I wasn't able to get the $35 Microsoft Xbox Series X deal.
Oh yeah, you couldn't get it, huh?
The bots beat me.
We're gonna get to that because I also got beat and I'm not happy.
Very frustrated.
Oh really? Wow.
Oh, those bots.
Yeah, this is a failure of Azure scalability if there's ever been one. What a fiasco.
Well,
that
save
was.
That though. Yes. That's because I know you want to spend some time with it. So
yeah,
sure.
We will talk about that. So what does this tell you about Microsoft's ambitions in gaming and Xbox, and how does this fit in with their other ambitions in with the cloud and things like that? I mean,
you know what, Microsoft is in a weird place right now because they are releasing consoles and those aren't really the primary focus on the future for them, right? And they obviously they want to sell consoles, but hardware is an expensive business to be in. It typically loses money. They're looking for this, you know, the razor blades here in this case, you know, in the back of the day, it was games, and now it's game subscription services to kind of float those customers and make them make sense financially. So what this is doing is stocking up that stable that they have of games that are available via Xbox Game Pass and cloud streaming. And it just makes this entire ecosystem better for gamers. It makes it more of a destination to go to. Sony is doing the same thing they've always done, which, by the way, has worked for sure. I mean, I'm not not dumping on that, but they want you to buy an expensive new console and they want you to buy games, you know, and Sony or Microsoft is saying you don't have to buy a console. You can play games almost anywhere. It's only a few places now, but eventually, obviously anywhere. What we want you to do is subscribe to this service and you'll be able to play. And, you know, depending on the capabilities of the system you're using, you'll have, you know, better experiences as you kind of go up the chain. But this stuff works basically everywhere. The Microsoft Studio games certainly do. So I think that's cool. Plus, you know, obviously they're cross-platform already. These guys have PC games that they probably sell through Steam. They have PlayStation games they sell through the PlayStation Store. That's not going to change, right? But, you know, if you have it with the subscription, then stuff comes out, DLC for a game, a new game, whatever. You're just going to get that, you know. And I, like I said, it's not quite no-brainer depending on the types of games you want to play. But before this acquisition, there were 167 games, I think it was, in Game Pass is another 50 plus coming from EA Play, and then whatever the stable is of Bethesda games, it's got to be several dozens of games, you know. So it's definitely going to go over 200. It just tells me they're serious about gaming. And if I know that's a silly thing to say on the verge of a console launch, but we as a community maybe have been doubting Microsoft's seriousness in this market for years, you know. And they've lost each generation so far with the consoles.
But what is lost only means that they didn't sell as many, right?
Yes. But I suspect it also means they made zero money.
Okay.
Like, I mean, Xbox as a business has not been profitable for Microsoft.
Well, that's why I'm wondering why they're spending $7.5 billion for a money-losing business.
Because now gaming is going to the cloud, and all of a sudden there's this wonderful convergence with one of Microsoft's key strengths.
Yes.
They are one of the few companies, although, you know, again, the Xbox Series X buying experience suggests otherwise, but that has the capacity and the infrastructure and the will, right, to do this kind of thing. They're going to do it for other companies. You know, back when there was an announcement where Sony was partnering with Microsoft to bring some future game service to Azure, my thought was, like, this could be a big chunk of what is the future of the Xbox business. You know, they may not brand it that way, but providing game hosting services for other companies like Activision or, EA is on Microsoft now. But, you know, there could be other big game publishing studios that want to do this kind of thing as well. Nintendo would be an obvious choice as well, right? The other console maker. They don't have any expertise or capability with regards to cloud computing at all. They can barely release mobile games. So that would be an ideal choice to come to Azure.
Or you know what's crazy to think about? Remember, just a few years ago, we were all speculating if Microsoft was going to sell off the Xbox division. Do you remember this?
Right. Yeah, of course.
Like, everybody was like, they're not really into gaming. Like, it doesn't fit with the rest of the company. And now look what's happening, right? It's like 180-degree change.
They make these big bets, right? So people forget that Xbox really started before the original Xbox, before it was called Xbox, because they were working with Sega on the, I must say, the Genesis, the Dreamcast. And there was a Windows CE environment in there, and that was going to be a one way that people could make games, and no one ever did or whatever. But I think that taught Microsoft that they needed to kind of control the environment. And the first Xbox was basically a PC. It was kind of technically successful. It, you know, it didn't win the market or whatever, but it did well unit sales wise. The Xbox 360 was the big push. They were going to be like Apple, beautiful white device, super sleek and modern. Huge reliability problems, scuttled that, you know, billion plus, whatever it was on the warranty cost that they just kind of covered for everybody. I don't remember the numbers anymore, but between three Xboxes, I think I got them fixed for the Red Ring of Death 8 times, something like that.
Can you believe that?
Xbox is going back. Yep.
That was a $3 billion write-off, I seem to remember, something like that.
Huge,
right?
Yeah, something huge.
Yeah.
So, and then the Xbox One, you know, talk about, you know, the starting gun goes off and you fall right in your face. I mean, they blew it from day one, which is too bad because the original Xbox One was kind of a clunker. It's up behind me there. It's a tank. But Xbox One S and then the X especially, those are really elegant devices. They're powerful. Now they're gone, but they got really inexpensive. I mean, and then Microsoft did the whole rejiggering of their strategy, you know, because they had to. But it turned into, I think Xbox has turned into something wonderful for gamers. And it's, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think they're going to do pretty well.
I was torn between the PlayStation 5 and an Xbox, but I think the acquisition of Bethesda.
Wow, really?
Well, I bet I'm not alone either. Because I'm a fan of Fallout and Skyrim. I like the Elder
Scrolls. Yeah, that's why the All Access thing is so appealing. Yeah, so you're $35 bucks a month. You're going to get the console. You own it, right, obviously, after 2 years. And then you get that whole stable of games.
Yeah.
And you know, for some people, that's going to be like you'll look at that list and say, "Yeah, this is everything I need."
Right.
You know.
Right.
And that's an amazing value. You know, if you can buy it.
Yeah, because we did the. If you didn't hear us last week or the week before, we did the math, and it's the Xbox is actually a little bit less expensive if you include the bundle cost for the software.
I think it was 40 or 60 bucks less.
Yeah, like that. You're actually saving money. You're not paying an interest anyway on the hardware. So that's, right. That's a pretty good deal. I mean, I would buy it outright, but actually I'd probably do the pass.
I tried to do both, but I would do either. But
I'll do whatever they'll let me do.
Yeah. But I mean, the other thing that's really interesting about that is obviously I know there's a term for this. Like there's an ad on TV for a car at a super low price. So you go to the dealership and it's like, oh, that one's already gone. But look, we have these awesome ones over here. Loss. Okay. Or you have this notion of like the Apple Watch starts at 99 cents, but you want the one at $600.
Right.
You know, so the thing that's cool about the Xbox All Access is that it's such an easy justification to make. You're not going from spending $300 to spending $500. You're going from spending $25 a month to $35 a month, right? Like that difference is like one trip to Dunkin' Donuts to keep beating to death. That's the same example I always use. But it's like $10 a month is negligible to anyone who would be in the market for buying one of these consoles. So it makes upgrading to the better one, you know, again, a no-brainer to keep reusing things, I always say. But it just makes it, you know, an easier thing, because when I was thinking about paying for these things outright, I'm like, I'll just get an S, you know.
Yeah.
I play on a 1440p set anyway. Who cares?
Right.
But $10 a month, like, X makes more sense.
Yeah. One of the things I look forward to every year, in fact, it just happened, is a visit from Microsoft's chief marketing officer, Chris Capicella. We like to look at the Microsoft holiday ad. They always do something pretty heartwarming. And Chris usually has some interesting things to say, like this.
For me, Microsoft Defender and Azure Sentinel, these are just complete hidden gems. And I think the world is starting to wake up to the fact that Microsoft is a serious security provider. And we can't do it alone. Like, security is not something one company, you like with email, Most companies will say, I'm only going to buy one email solution. I'm not going to run Gmail and Office 365. That's kind of goofy. But security is not that way. You know, security, people spend a lot of money on a lot of different solutions. And this is the year, this past year is the year that I think Defender and Sentinel really sort of grew up and came into their own. And we have a lot of customers telling us, my gosh, you've become a much more important security company in our world than you were 2 or 3 years ago. And I think this one will become a bigger story next year and the year after. And so I wanted to plant the seed, like Microsoft Defender and Azure Sentinel, I think are two hidden gems that don't get that much attention, but they've become far more important to our customers. And, you know, we don't do a ton on consumer security. We have a bunch of tech built into Windows itself, but when we listen to consumers, you know, they're very worried about their identity. They're very worried about their documents, their PC getting broken into, et cetera. So I don't think it's just this boring commercial thing that some of your listeners may be like, God, I hate that enterprise stuff. I just want to talk about end user stuff. But
hey,
I actually
think.
Let him talk. Let him talk.
I'm trying to get as much goodness in here as I can. The email. Anyways, I think watch. You know that's one I put your I put your eyes on that may not be as much on as they are today.
I feel like the changing of the branding around security has made it really confusing.
Like
when people say Defender, I'm like, wait, are they talking about the thing that I used to know as Defender? Or is this something that's been rebranded to Defender? You know, like I have to do all these extra machinations before I can figure it out.
The simplest way to think of it is we have rebranded all of our threat protection to be Defender. Yeah. And so Defender is our threat protection, sort of full stop. And that we have Defender inside of Microsoft 365. You know, we've got a bunch of sort of Defender products, if you will, but you should just think Microsoft Defender really comes down to threat protection. Azure Sentinel, as the name tries to imply, Sentinel, someone sort of, you know, watching over your stuff and being your Sentinel. This really analyzes large volumes of data and it aggregates data from all different types of services, your different applications you're running, hardware you might be running, devices your end users are running. It can run on-prem, you know, it spans on-prem in the cloud, it spans clouds. So it's, you know, in the SIEM category, as opposed to Defender, which is really about threat protection. So the name changes are complicated to keep up with, but I feel like these two are pretty important ones that we believe will stick over time. And think about Defender as threat protection, and you should think about a Sentinel as much more about sort of this massive analyzer of data from all over the place to, you know, to do that. SIEM category, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that's why I call out just those two.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so way over my allotted time. any last tough ones for me before I go? Or should we call it a holiday? The Microsoft Paint.
Yeah, let's not ruin the holiday.
Microsoft Paint holiday.
No, unless you want to drop any new code names or anything, you know, we're here for those.
Mary Jo's always ready for those.
You know, a list of things you're not allowed to speak about.
Yeah, just tell us what you can't say. That's good.
Well,
yeah.
All I have to do is read your Twitter feed, and then I see all the code names.
Yeah,
and then,
nice.
You know,
that's how he keeps up.
You know, like some of them, not all of them are right, not all of them are wrong. Like, so I could just go through your Twitter feed and read it out loud to your readers, but I think they can look at that too. Yeah, nothing I would drop that, you know, I don't read you already writing about.
Okay.
And I would just say, you know, thank you. Obviously, thank you to the three of you for having the show. For me personally, it has been a little bit of a semblance of normalcy in just a wicked year. And I don't mean that to sound too corny, but, you know, it's been a consistent thing that, you know, you can listen into every week. And that's actually been kind of sweet and nice. And I think you both do such a wonderful job covering the company and trying to cover a very, very broad, complicated business. So thanks for another year of hard work.
Kind of amazes us that you listen, to be honest with you.
I know.
Well, every once in a while, we'll be talking about something, and Leo will say, oh, Chris is probably on his treadmill listening to us. And then you get that kind of little shutter up the back, like, oh, right, people listen to this.
It's actually walking out in the city as opposed to in the treadmill. Okay. But yeah. It's yeah. true. Yeah. I always laugh when I hear my name.
Chris just drove into a ditch. We better we change the right, subject right. here. Chris Capitelli
listening, pay attention to the road.
Really.
I'm just walking. I'm not driving. I'm just walking.
Okay. I will confess that often I just pretend you're the sole audience member.
Right.
And we just think about you and what
it's nice to get together with that member once a year and just you know, kind of see how the year went.
Think?
And
yeah.
are there any directions you think we should go in? And
Chris is our first line, front line, back line, every line.
Yes.
It's really nice to have you. Thank you for making your time in this for this.
You bet. And I don't know if you know this, but we've opened up our London and Sydney experience centers. The flagship stores are opened up as experience centers in New York, hopefully very soon. And so maybe this year we could do, you know, you guys could do a show from one of those spots
that'd be
again.
Cool.
Yeah. Really cool. Something up the world, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, take care. Have a happy holiday.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
All right. I'm going to press the magic button that makes Chris disappear. That is really cool. I just love that. Something new the team worked.
It's like
up.
Get the hook.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, it's been a fun year on Windows Weekly. Of course, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are just the best in the business. We started the year full of high hopes. We ended it full of COVID-19, but we managed to get all the way through. Maybe not just COVID-19. I might have been full of some other things. But thanks to Richard Campbell, but we expect there'll be lots of fun in 2021, and we really hope you will join us. Thanks to all of you for watching the show. I wish you and listening. I wish you all the happiest of holidays. I hope you get to spend some time with family and friends or just sitting by the virtual fire, enjoying life a little bit. We'll be back next week with a brand new Windows Weekly episode and plenty more for 2021. Have a great holiday. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time.